All right. Let me get rid of this. All right. Okay, this, the second case that we have on for argument this afternoon is number 2050963, Vista Health Plan Incorporated versus the United States. Ms. Riggs, Mr. Sandberg, can you hear okay?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Yes, I can.
Appreciate your flexibility. We're sorry that the fog prevented you from having a nice meal in New Orleans on the spoof of your clients, but you know, you'll have to get it the next time. But anyway, otherwise we're glad that, you know, at least we had the Zoom capability so we didn't have to totally reset the case at another time. So I think technically we're good to go. So on behalf of Vista, Ms. Riggs, we'll hear from you.
Thank you. This case presents significant Administrative Procedure Act issues that are probably more significant than the Affordable Care Act issues. If I were still a law professor, I'd be saying this is a perfect federal APA law school exam. Has jurisdiction when the district court orders remand? When does a party have a right to an agency adjudication? And the validity of a rule? And what is the record that the court reviews upon review of a rule? I want to start with jurisdiction because I think that's obviously the most significant preliminary question. We filed this appeal and we had the Health and Human Services, had the appellee objected, we probably would have briefed the issue earlier and may have reached this issue at an earlier point. But there is also something to be said for being dismissed by this court for a remand, as opposed to going back and availing oneself of a remand and then having to fight for jurisdiction should one wish to bring all of the same validity and constitutional challenges. I suspect that if we had followed that process, simply availing ourselves of the remand and then brought all of the same issues and potentially new ones to the district court, we might be fighting a challenge over whether the district court could hear those allegations. And having looked at this, I have to say that I think we do question whether the court has jurisdiction. Of course, in Memorial Hospital, the court said that it is a judgment that remands any part of an administrative appeal is not final and is not reviewable. And you have to go back and avail yourself of the remand first. There are a number of exceptions to that. This court has addressed, for example, in Silver versus Secretary of the Army, found that remand to correct military records in a case to challenge the accuracy of those records was not final and remanded and said the court did not have jurisdiction until after the remand was resolved. In Barfield, which we believe is the most applicable case, that was one regarding disability benefits that had been denied, and the district court remanded to the Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare to determine whether the applicant had been denied due process. And this court said it did not have jurisdiction under 28 U.S.C. Section 1291 to consider the appeal. We believe that Barfield decision is probably the most applicable because we have a due process issue here. What the court did was remand to the agency because the agency record was not clear on whether Vista Health Plan had received the hearing to which it was entitled. So the court basically granted our due process concern. The court also referenced the section on administrative appeals, 45 CFR, section 156.1.12.20. This court could probably look just to the statute or the rule to determine whether Vista was entitled to more review before the agency or to some kind of hearing. I'm not sure the court has to, or that the district court had to reach the due process issue, but it did. And we made those arguments because we believed that the statutory, or the rule review was insufficient. So we also made our due process argument that we are entitled to an agency adjudication under the federal APA. And it's undisputed that there was no hearing. CMS takes the position that the only thing that it can do in a review is consider whether data has been properly inputted into its system in order to apply its formula and adjustment transfer has been properly calculated. Its position is it doesn't consider any other issues. The district court didn't really go into detail. It just said we're entitled to a hearing. Say how much? And as we all know, in due process, there are two questions. Do you get a hearing? And how much? Is it a name-clearing hearing, for example, or is it a full-blown evidentiary hearing? And I anticipate that we will have that issue arise on remand to the CMS. How much review do you get? We'll have a case that is pending before a hearing examiner at the CMS, and the position that the CMS took in that
Riggs, it may be me, but I don't hear you quite as loudly as I would prefer. So maybe on my end, I don't know, but if on your end, if there's a way to turn it up a little bit.
Is that better?
It's much better.
Okay. And I'll sit forward a little bit too, so I'm closer to my microphone.
Okay, thank you. I mean, I heard you, but you know, I was kind of straining upward. So thanks so much.
We don't want you to do that. No.
All right. No worries.
I want it to be clear. The CMS takes the position that all that they cannot declare their rule invalid, and they can't declare the statute unconstitutional or their own rules invalid. We agree. However, they can hear evidence and at least arguments or documentary evidence of why VISTA believes that the rule was improperly applied to it. And beyond just the question of did you properly enter claims data, if we had that opportunity, the district court would have the opportunity to review, would have a record to review of an agency adjudication. Now the CMS has come back and said, but you don't have the record, you've got the only record you need. And the only record you need is the record of the notice and comment rulemaking. The agency's administrative record for an agency adjudication and an agency's rulemaking record when it engages in its quasi-legislative function. Agencies, when they do agency adjudications under the APA, are acting in a quasi-judicial capacity, making fact findings, making conclusions of law, and they do it in the context of, in this case, just VISTA Health Plan and the application of the rate adjustment transfer rule to VISTA in the context of a particular assessment, 2017 and 2018. When an agency passes a rule, they create an agency rulemaking record. That's their quasi-legislative function. And what the agency brought forth to the district court was just their rulemaking record, their legislative record. And it's undisputed that they never gave VISTA agency adjudication or an administrative hearing.
Now, Counsel, let me interrupt you and just make sure that I'm following along here. I mean, I guess what you're talking about is sort of a dichotomy. There are the challenges VISTA makes to the promulgation of the 2017 and 2018 rules and the claims that are related to that. And what you're discussing now is what you would say is an adjudicative agency proceeding, which is the computation of what VISTA owed under those rules, right? I mean, in other words, specific to VISTA, what processes VISTA do, et cetera. Am I following you correctly?
Yeah, a due process argument about that we never got that hearing. We never got the adjudicative hearing.
But let me ask you this too. I mean, I may just be a little confused and my learned colleagues may not be as crystal clear as crystal. But when you started out talking about jurisdiction and you said there was a question as to whether this court has jurisdiction, are you talking about this whole case? I mean, it's not often that an appellant will come in and basically start out by saying we should dismiss the appeal? Or are you only talking about the due process considerations with regard to what you say is the adjudicative administrative process? I'm a little confused on that.
Sure. I think what the cases have said is that if you don't have a final decision, you don't have jurisdiction, and you got to go back to the agency, and then you can still bring all the same issues, but you have to wait until after you follow your remand. It obviously means there's some duplication of effort. It's less efficient. And there are exceptions to that doctrine, but it's hard for me, even looking at the cases we've cited to the court. There are the Fifth Circuit cases, Barfield and Silver. There are a number of Tenth Circuit cases as well, where the courts have said that if there's a collateral order, where the orders are so significant that there's nothing for the agency to do, then there's no reason for a remand. And so it is a dichotomy. And I think some advocates might say if the court really wants to reach the issues, it will say that there are significant issues that stand alone and must be resolved before there can be a remand. If they want to see the issues more fully developed, or they don't want to address the issues, they will say we lack jurisdiction and send it back. For example, if this court
let me ask you this, because you're down about 4 minutes. With respect to the argument that you just made, what is the relief you're asking for with respect to the point that you just made and that Judge Wilson asked you to clarify? What's the relief you're asking for?
I think we are asking that the case be remanded to the court with instructions that it go back to the agency for a hearing on due process, but that we wait and bring our constitutional claims upon the appeal of that decision. I think that's the most consistent, as an officer of the court, I think that is the most consistent with the case law. I would love to go forward on the constitutional issues. We have challenged the rule on the basis that that it lacks a rational basis, because when the individual mandate went away from the Affordable Care Act, that the basis for the rate adjustment transfer also disappeared. So we have a number of issues that we would love to argue here, and issues that I think we clearly have Article III standing to raise, whereas many previous litigants did not, as we know from the California versus Texas case. But I fear that I would hate to take those issues up. I would hate to have those issues come up and have review be denied because a higher court said this court did not have jurisdiction.
So, counsel, just to play the other side, if I apprehend what the government is going to say, that this does not entitle to a separate adjudicatory proceeding, because effectively what they've done is they've promulgated these rules, the rules have a formula, and what Vista owes spits out on the other end, and here it is. I mean, is that right?
Correct. I think that's what their argument will be, however, is that we don't get a hearing. And I think this court, but the issue, however, is they did not appeal the district court's decision or challenge the district court's decision on the remand. They did not perfect their own appeal and say they're not entitled to a hearing. The district court erred in saying you have a due process right to a hearing. Indeed, it's difficult for them to do that in light of the fact that their own rules give the right to an administrative appeal. Now, it may be a question of how much of an administrative appeal, but clearly they give the right to an administrative appeal. And so it's difficult for them to argue that we have no right to any kind of review. And here, there is no real record to show that we got review and how much. There's no findings of fact and conclusions of law. And they could come back and say, you don't get that much of a hearing, and here's why we don't think you do. But even that would give the district court something to review, and that's something that we did not have And there is no agency record to show that. And that's part of what the district court, what Judge Yackel was attempting to remand for. I'll reserve the remaining minute if you have other questions.
Where are you if you lose on your contentions of retroactivity and takings?
Challenge to the validity of the rule. And I think this court could disagree with the New Mexico court on the consideration of the average state premium.
Let me just ask this question. Suppose that we think that under Landgraf you cannot prevail, that there's no retroactive effect here. That is that they have not attached consequences to pre-existing duties. Now, where does that leave you?
That is only one of our arguments about why the rule is invalid. May I take a little of my time I had reserved for rebuttal to complete the answer, sir?
No, I'll give you 2 minutes in cyberspace to respond to Judge Higginbotham's question. So this forthright, and then if necessary, I'll give the government a little time to deal with it, since you spent so much time on the jurisdictional kind of issue, but the points there. So clerk's just giving you 2 minutes, not 201, but 2 minutes.
Judge Higginbotham, we made a number of challenges to the validity of the rule. Leave aside the question, do we get a hearing? Leave aside the question of whether the rules applied retroactively and whether they can enforce it during 2018 when the New Mexico court suspended it. Our validity challenge, that challenge of the retroactivity, that's a procedural defect. Our allegation is you didn't follow proper APA notice and comment. But we also challenge the substance of the rule. We have said that Section 18.063 requires that the CMS consider actual risk, actuarial risk, not that it consider revenue, and that they have diluted that question. Now, the New Mexico court, after it went up, the Tenth Circuit said, there's nothing wrong with the agency considering an average state premium. They certainly have the authority to do that. We respectfully disagree with that and believe that this court should take another look, compare the rule with the actual statute, the actual language of Section 18.063. We have also argued that the rule does not have a rational basis, because in the NFIB case, the first Sebelius case, the court said that you may not impose an individual mandate. The rate adjustment transfer is entirely a creature designed to accommodate the effect of the individual mandate. So without the individual mandate, there is a fairly traceable claim from our harm to that particular provision. Now, we didn't make a direct constitutional challenge, but it is why we say that rule, part of why we say that rule is invalid.
Okay, thank you.
All right, okay, thank you. All right, and you've reserved your rebuttal time intact. All right, we'll hear from Ms. Sandberg for the government.
Good afternoon, may it please the court, Jeff Sandberg for HHS. I'd like to start with talking a little bit about what the district court here did decide and didn't decide, because this is a complete jumble that has landed in your laps. I'm sorry that it has landed there, but I think I can clear a few things up. So the district court deduced 9 different claims in Vista's complaint. It reached and resolved the merits on 8 of them against Vista. That's the retroactivity and the takings and everything else. And then there on the 9th claim was a due process claim. What Vista pled in its complaint was that it had filed a request for reconsideration as to the 2018 risk adjustment charges that hadn't yet been acted upon by CMS. And for unclear reasons, the district court never learned that that request for reconsideration had in fact been denied by CMS in November 2019. But the district court, instead of inquiring what's the status of this reconsideration request, has it been acted on, had said, look, I think there's a gap in the record here, and so I'm going to send this back to the agency for anything further that needs to happen to adjudicate this request for reconsideration. And upon getting this, you know, we said, well, that's, you know, that's kind of funny. We already denied the request for reconsideration. Vista knows that. It's received that letter. And then Vista took its notice of appeal to this court. And so we figured, okay, you know, Vista knows its request has been acted on. We know that we acted on its request. This appeal is going to be about the eight other things that the district court actually resolved the merits on rather than anything else. The district court didn't hold that the government had to give a hearing to Vista. I'm not sure why Vista keeps saying that it, the district court ruled in its favor on due process. All the district court said was, Vista is talking about a reconsideration request that hasn't been addressed. I'm going to let the HHS address it. We have since in a July 2021 letter sent, completed the remand by telling Vista, look, we denied your thing and your request for reconsideration in November 2019. There's nothing further that needs to happen now. HHS is completely done with this case. The district court has told us it's completely done with this case. And the claims, this goes directly to Judge Wilson's very helpful question before about, you know, is Vista bringing sort of substantive claims to the to challenging the rule and then also a kind of seeking adjudication of how the rule applies to it. Vista, in fact, is not challenging the application of the rules to Vista in the sense of you miscalculated the number or you looked at the wrong invoices. Vista does not deny that if these rules are constitutional and consistent with statute, that Vista owes the money owed. Vista seems to think that it gets to have an individual hearing on whether the rules have to apply to it, but that's as a matter of administrative law, that's not correct. I mean, and if Congress passes Title VII into law, an employer doesn't get to have a hearing on whether Title VII applies to it or not. Like, it applies to you unless there's some exception. And here, HHS had over the years entertained the idea, should there be exceptions for small insurers? Should things apply differently to new insurers than old insurers? And HHS said no. And the way we're going to run the risk adjustment program is there's not going to be special rules for small insurers, and these are the rules that apply to everyone. And you can seek individual reconsideration if you think that HHS is calculating the numbers correctly or is misunderstanding something about your circumstances, you know, the population you covered. But you don't get to challenge the rules themselves in an administrative hearing.
Well, Ms. Sandberg, given where we are then, what is your position as to what this panel should do?
Well, on appellate jurisdiction, we flagged this in our officer of the court role. I don't think we like have all that much at stake in whether this court dismisses or whether it hears it. But some facts that are relevant to you in thinking about appellate jurisdiction are there's nothing left for the agency to decide. The only claims that agency that Vista says it wants to present for the agency are the very same claims that the eight claims it pressed to the district court and the district court ruled on. Like, what Vista says it wants a hearing on before the agency is notice and comment, retroactivity, takings, all of the things that are fully briefed before you. And we don't understand Vista to have presented any independent claim that hasn't been ruled on yet. So from our perspective, HHS is done, the district court is done. If this court thinks that there's a problem just jurisdictionally, I think you could dismiss for lack of jurisdiction and we could go back to the district court and say a Rule 60B posture and ask the district court to enter a new judgment that you know, doesn't remand to the agency because there's no need for a remand because we already adjudicated the reconsideration request, and then we could come back up. I would just note that, I mean, that dismissing for lack of jurisdiction would have the effect of, you know, kicking the can down the road and rewarding Vista for taking an appeal that was untimely. And ultimately, this is money that's not owed to the government. This is money owed to other Texas insurers that Vista has not been paying. And those insurers are not here before you, you know, begging to get their money sooner. So, there apparently is not super great urgency, but ultimately this is money that Vista owes to other insurance companies in the state of Texas that, and the longer we kick the can down the road, the longer it takes for them to get paid the money that they're owed.
Counsel, those are all good points, but I mean, if there's a remand order back to the agency, then do we have jurisdiction? I mean, do we have an option in the matter? I mean, there are plenty of cases where the court lacks jurisdiction where it'd be a lot more efficient and quicker to reach it, get there and decide the claims, but we can't do that. That may not be a satisfactory outcome or answer, but what is the answer? I mean, if there's a remand order, do we have jurisdiction to reach part of the case or any of the case, or is the relief that Vista's asked for today what we've got to do?
Right. I agree with you, Your Honor, that at a certain point that, you know, the rule is the rule, whether it's convenient or not. And the normal rule is that a plaintiff cannot appeal an order that remands to the agency. This court doesn't have all that much law on this issue. The Ninth Circuit has a lot of law on this issue, in which they've sort of recognized in unusual circumstances, which I would submit this is one of them, a court could find jurisdiction because really there's nothing left to do before the agency. Vista doesn't have any claim that the agency could adjudicate at this point that is different than the claims that it presented to the district court and that are now before this court on appeal. But you know, we ultimately don't oppose if this court doesn't think that it can find a way to find jurisdiction here. What's so odd
Walk me through how we find jurisdiction.
There are two points. One, there's nothing. There's nothing left to do before the agency. The district court's ground for the remand rested on a perception that there might still be some proceeding before the agency that hadn't been completed. That proceeding
that was more than a perception. That's what the district court said, right? I mean, in other words, how are we to get beyond what we know is in the record, which is a remand order?
Well, the record before you now reflects that the agency had acted on the reconsideration request in November 2019. It reaffirmed in a July 2021 letter that said, this is HHS's response on remand to the district court's order. There's nothing further for us to do because we've already adjudicated the relevant request. Again, the request that VISTA wants to present to the agency is the very same claims it wants to present to you on appeal. I'm not sure why it wants to go to the agency and ask the agency to hold that what it's doing is a regulatory taking or a notice and comment violation when. And so the reason we've ended up in this place and the reason the government didn't take it across appeal is that we thought that VISTA was going to be arguing to you about all of the things it says it cares about here and that it had essentially forfeited the due process claim that has no independent content and that it knew had already been adjudicated, you know, that the request for consideration had been adjudicated in November 2019. But, you know, ultimately, I mean, if this court takes, we don't think there's any merit to any of VISTA's various arguments across the board. VISTA's now talking about the constitutionality of the individual mandate, which it didn't even brief on appeal, so it's forfeited those claims. Certainly, we don't want this court to rule against the government on any of these claims without adequate consideration and argument. And so, you know, this argument's been all about appellate jurisdiction, and it makes me a little nervous to imagine, you know, the court having to go in and finding jurisdiction and then rule on a bunch of things we haven't talked about and where I think VISTA has said some things that are quite wrong in its briefs. So we're, you know, I won't fight you that hard if you think that the right answer is to dismiss for lack of jurisdiction. I just think it's a little odd because there's really nothing left to do before the agency. And what I would submit should happen if this court dismisses for lack of jurisdiction is that the party should go back to the district court and say, look, there's nothing left to do before the agency. Please amend your judgment under Rule 60B to finally dismiss their due process claim, and then VISTA can take any appeal that it thinks appropriate at that point.
What stopped either of the parties from doing that before it came up?
Nothing would have stopped it, Your Honor, and in retrospect, that idea looks a lot better. It's just that the government thought that VISTA was abandoning its due process claim on appeal and that it was focusing on the other things that it professed to care about, the retroactivity, the notice and comment takings. All of those things are meritless, but that's what they, you know, that's what they spent the bulk of their time briefing in district court and on appeal. And lots of courts, I think, including this court, have the rule that if an appellant on appeal disclaims any intention to pursue a particular claim, that can establish appellate jurisdiction. Like if a district court dismisses without prejudice with leave to amend, and the appellant says, I don't want leave to amend, I want to stand on my current complaint, here I am. Like courts of appeals can have jurisdiction in that instance. And I think that's where we thought VISTA was going. It knew that there was no further hearing it would get before the agency. And so, you know, I think in hindsight, I could have, you know, the government could have saved you all some trouble. VISTA could have saved you some trouble. The district court could have saved you some trouble if we'd just gotten a clearer ruling. But here we are.
But it would help the court if you're a little bit clearer about what you want.
Well, what we would like ultimately is for if VISTA is going to keep pressing these claims,
there's a way to do that. The way to do that is in briefing the appeal, and not waiting to get to the oral argument and coming up with by the way, we don't have jurisdiction, or you know, I really don't want to be here, whatever.
Right, I share the confusion because, you know, we're here because VISTA took this appeal. We, as officers of the court, in our response brief said, hey, court, like there's a jurisdictional question here, but we think there's a path for you to find jurisdiction. And now VISTA, sort of oddly, is saying, I don't want you to find jurisdiction. I mean, this is VISTA's appeal. And I think VISTA on page 9, although it says contradictory things, on page 9 of its reply brief, it says,
So where are we now? What do you think we should do? What do you want us to do?
Well, given that this argument has focused on appellate jurisdiction rather than on the merits, I guess I would be more comfortable with a remand because I don't want this court to feel in a position where it's arguing on issues where it hasn't you know, been able to focus adequately on them. I mean, but ultimately it's, you know, appellate jurisdiction is your call. We're flagging it as an issue that unfortunately has to be encountered.
Well, if we were to, you know, find the path that you said and then rule on all these other issues, then Vista would file a petition for panel rehearing or rehearing in bank and say, well, the panel ruled on the merits of things of which there was no jurisdiction. Yeah. And then we'd be going around the rose bush over, because let's say if we ruled against Vista on the merits, well, then they say King's X didn't have jurisdiction, and then our court will swipes it out, and then it's more down. I'm not saying they don't have clean hands, but the way the case was presented to us was not that we were going to spend 40 minutes really talking about this jurisdictional issue. If we thought so, we would ask for supplemental briefing or whatever, whatever. We studied up on all these merits issues. So at any event, it's one of the values of oral argument to get crystallized what is before us and what isn't, because it sure didn't come through that way in the briefs. But, you know, right, as Wilson said, we either have jurisdiction or we don't. So, you know, we see that that's kind of primo before us. But I hear right. you saying so, that, you know, go ahead. You still got time on your argument. I'm not.
I do want to, in the event that the court thinks that there is jurisdiction or there may be a path to jurisdiction, I'm fully prepared to answer any questions you may have about any of Vista's merits claims. The last thing I wanted to point out on jurisdiction is just that one of the things Vista says in its reply brief is that if the government is correct, that the government doesn't have to provide a hearing insurer by insurer on whether the rules are the rules and apply to them, then this court would have jurisdiction under 28 U.S.C. 1291 because there's nothing further for the agency to do. So they have at least said, Vista has said in writing in its reply brief, the same thing I am saying now, which is there's nothing further for the agency to do. The government doesn't have to give each insurer a hearing on whether the rules really are the rules, even applied to them. And Vista doesn't have any claim that HHS could properly adjudicate about, you know, did HHS look at the right invoices or calculate things correctly. All that Vista wants to argue about before the agency is the same thing it argued about in the district court and argues about in its opening brief to you, which is the retroactivity and the notice and comment and takings and everything else. So if you do have questions about retroactivity or notice and comment takings, I would be happy to entertain them. I would just want to point out the basic facts of what happened here, just for your honor's awareness. Congress mandated that states, or failing that, HHS implement an annual risk adjustment program in each state under which insurers who end up covering healthier populations, for example, Vista, pay a charge to insurers who end up covering sicker populations. And HHS issues notice and comment rules under that program each year and does so well in advance of the year so that insurers can rely on those rules in making their rate setting decisions. And HHS has used the same basic methodology, including the payment transfer formula that Vista says it doesn't like. HHS has applied that every year in the same way, except with only minor technical details that have differed since 2014. And the reason why this litigation came about was in early 2018, after the rules for 2017 and 2018 had been in effect for a long time, a federal district court in New Mexico set aside HHS's rules in part to the extent it relied on statewide average premiums for reasons that were later reversed by the 10th Circuit on appeal. So, you know, we all, like Vista would concede, we all recognize the New Mexico District Court decision setting aside the rules was erroneous, but that decision didn't get immediately appealed. Instead, the government sought reconsideration, thinking that it would get prompt reconsideration in light of the fact that another court in Massachusetts had upheld the rules. That didn't pan out, and there ended up becoming a brewing crisis in the insurance markets that HHS heard about from members of Congress, from state insurance commissioners, from the insurance industry, saying, hey, we need to know whether these rules are going to be in effect or not, because we're planning for the next year. And HHS, in order to prevent such a crisis in the insurance markets, reissued the very same rules again it had already issued, just with an additional policy explanation that the New Mexico court had, as it turns out, erroneously said that HHS needed to issue. So HHS did.
Counsel,
essentially, what is the?
Just to stop you really quick, I mean, when the New Mexico court ruled the way it did, HHS didn't do anything to vacate the rules. In other words, what HHS did was comply with the court order, correct?
That's right. There was no
You didn't withdraw.
HHS didn't repeal the rules or like in the Bowen versus Georgetown case, which VISTA relies on, HHS there said, okay, you got me. I'm going to settle your cost reports hospitals on the basis of what the court did. And here HHS didn't do that. HHS said, we think this is wrong. We're taking steps to reverse it in the meantime, because we don't want to be, you know, held in contempt of court. We're not going to implement a rule that the court tells us we can't do right now. But HHS has said all along, these are the rules. Congress has said, you know, HHS has no choice in the matter. It has to implement a risk adjustment program. That's Congress said you have to do it for each year. And so, you know, if HHS.
Well, I mean, I guess what I'm getting to is this issue of detrimental reliance. You know, you have situations where an agency will set out on a course, maybe not enforcing a rule that's in place. But they take an action to say, effectively, we're not going to enforce the rule, pending whatever it may be, this challenge, that challenge, or the other. Or there's a promulgation of a rule, here it is. And for whatever reason, though, I don't see here that the agency took a position and told the folks that are subject to these rules, we're not going to enforce it, or we're not going to promulgate it, or any other thing like that on which somebody could detrimentally rely. I mean, am I reading that right? Or you want to respond to their argument a little bit on that point?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. HHS never said, okay, despite the fact that the ACA says there's going to be a risk adjustment program, like the court has canceled it for the year. Like HHS never said anything that could induce reasonable reliance on the view that the programs were over for that year. All HHS said, and these statements are collected at pages 26 to 27 of our brief to you all. HHS just said, we are under a court order right now that says we can't use statewide average premium, which means we can't do the third step of our methodology, which means we can't collect the charges and payments, but we're working to get this reversed, and you will hear from us as soon as we're allowed to collect your money again. And so—
I mean, this is a matter of weeks, not months, that HHS is giving this guidance as well, correct?
That's absolutely right. And
the promulgation of the re-promulgation of the 2017 rule happened within what, about a month of the district court ruling in New Mexico?
That's not quite right. The New Mexico court's original ruling, I think, was in late February, perhaps March, but I think late February of 2018. And we moved for reconsideration. The court held a hearing on that and then told us at the hearing that it wasn't going to act until probably Labor Day. And the first regulatory deadline that HHS was up against was late June to tell each insurer what its payment or charge was for the year. And then July, the month of July, is normally when HHS would do reconsideration requests from those insurers who say, you calculated my numbers wrong. And then August, September, October is when HHS collects the money and then gives it to the insurers who are owed it. And so July is when HHS started to speak publicly about the fact that it couldn't collect the money because we hadn't gotten the district court order reversed or reconsidered yet. And you know, the response was an outcry from members of Congress and state insurance commissioners saying, you absolutely have to get this fixed because we've been planning our business for years on these charges being there. You know, we set our premiums in accordance with these rules. And so when HHS reissued the rules, all it was doing was reinforcing what everyone had been planning on. I mean, it's sort of the opposite of retroactivity. It would have been retroactive if HHS had changed the rules at that point and said, okay, now the program is canceled, or now the program has different rules. I mean, this is what everybody had been planning on since, in the case of the 2017 benefit year, since March 2016, everybody had been planning around these rules. And the district court didn't say those rules were illegal. It just said that they needed a little bit more explanation.
Well, let me go back to an earlier question. Put it aside for the moment, jurisdiction. If we regret that we reject the contention that that these rules had any retrospective bite, or that there is any reliance that might otherwise be curative, then where is this litigation?
That would mean that you would affirm the dismissal of the retroactivity-based claim. But unfortunately, VISTA has other claims that we understand to be logically independent, such as the claim that the reissued rule should have gone through notice and comment, that the reissued rule is a regulatory takings violation.
Those rules were briefed, yeah, okay. But we'd simply go through those other rules itself, like whether that in fact is sustainable as in the record before us.
Right, and to be clear, you know, we find no merit in any of those claims, and if this court finds it has jurisdiction, and if it has,
would you just articulate for us what those are? these other
claims? Well, starting on the notice and comment claim, the district court ruled in our favor by saying that the agency should have gone through notice and comment for the reissuance of the 2017 rule, but that the failure to do so was harmless. We think that's right. It was harmless, but we think the reasons that the district court.
I understand your argument. I want to hear from you what's the extent and what we do. That's one of them. Now, what's the next one?
That's one of them. And I just wanted to close that one out. The reasons the district court gave for why the failure to go through notice and comment was harmless are actually reasons why notice and comment was unnecessary in the first place, because
argument on it. Just tell me what those issues are. I'm familiar with your arguments, but
It's a little odd for me to be in the position of making Vista's arguments for it, but they've asserted a regulatory takings claim, which is without merit for reasons the district court gave, that it's not a taking when you walk into a regulated market knowing the rules ahead of time.
Counsel, listen to me, please. Slow down and listen to me. I ask you to tell me what the issues are.
And regulatory takings. You want to argue the comment.
What's the next issue?
There's an arbitrary and capricious challenge to the fact that the rule, that HHS's methodology includes the statewide average premium as a scaling factor to convert risk scores into dollars.
And we have to rule on that?
I think so, if you find jurisdiction.
All right, go ahead.
And I just would be flipping to the table of contents of their opening brief, Your Honor, to see if there's anything else to march through. I mean, there's some claims that we disagree with Vista about whether they're properly presented to you, like everything they said.
Which claims did you come prepared to argue?
I came prepared to argue the ones that are in their brief and not the ones that my colleague was talking to you about earlier, whether the ACA, the individual mandates,
repeal. Well, let's just limit to the ones that are in the brief then.
The ones that are in the brief are retroactivity, which we discussed a fair amount with Judge Wilson, notice and comment, whether the rule is arbitrary and capricious because it includes statewide average premium, and whether it is a regulatory taking that HHS applied its rules to Vista.
Okay, and that's it. Okay. If you prevail on all of those issues, where is the litigation?
I think you affirm the district court judgment, and Vista can seek further review if it wishes to.
Okay, thank you.
I just note if the court ends up having further questions that we didn't get to today and wants supplemental briefing or re-argument on anything, I would be happy to do that. I know it's been a huge mess with this threshold jurisdictional issue, and so I apologize for whatever role the government played in
all the issues. All the issues that you've iterated have been briefed, so they're at least in the brief, and I mean the keys to the kingdom are the briefs, and so you know they're laid out there, notwithstanding that most of the time has not gone into them, but if they're fairly responded to in the briefs, then if we get there, then that's what we'll go with. Unless there's some supervening event out here agency wise or otherwise, we're going to take the case as we find it. So all right, I think we have you in terms of the jurisdictional issue, and with Judge Higginbotham's help, we've had you articulate what you view as the issues that were front and center. So I think we're good. So we're going to go back to Ms. Riggs. Now, Ms. Riggs, fairly, you spent 3/4 of the time on this jurisdictional issue. So, you know, you've got rebuttal, but I'm not going to give you extra rebuttal in order to, you know, go through all that other stuff. You picked your poison in terms of the path you wanted to take. And so you wanted to convince us about jurisdiction. So take your 5 minutes and make the best use of it.
Absolutely. And I apologize for devoting so much time to that. I felt as an officer of the court, once it was raised by CMS trying to assert that VISTA had not preserved its right to review regarding the 2018 rate adjustment transfer, that we had to address it. And we do disagree with the agency about what they can do. We believe that their own rules provide for more review than what they say they've given us. And the fact that they say it's final, we've done it, does not resolve the issue.
Well, do you agree with counsel opposite that there is nothing remaining to be done below?
Oh, we don't. 18.063 does require the adoption of a rate adjustment transfer formula, but the factors and whether to apply them is something within their discretion. And in that sense, there is some issue of, do they have discretion not to enforce? Do they have the discretion to consider some of the factors they consider? There's another Medicare program that's referenced in section 18.063. So we disagree that there's nothing still to do before the CMS and that all they have to do is plug in the data.
All right, so if we were to find no jurisdiction and send this back down to the district court, what is it you say happens there?
I think it goes back to the agency to create a proper record of just what the agency believes it has jurisdiction to do.
So what I guess I'm saying, are you going to have to convince the district court that there's more to be done? If the district court feels, I mean, are you going to be having to convince the district court that there is something more to be done in order to get back down? And if so, what is it you're going to say to the district court?
I think we will have that obligation. I think it's already in the opinion, though, that Judge Yackel pointed to this section, which allows the introduction of evidence before the CMS. And I don't think the district court agreed with the position the CMS took, that all you do is plug in the data and did we apply the formula correctly. Now, does that mean that the agency has the authority to declare the rule invalid? No. Do they have the authority to declare it unconstitutional? No. But can they take evidence on why Vista believes the rule should not be applied to it? They can. And if they want to
counsel, but if I understood what counsel opposite was saying, there was actually a reconsideration by the agency in 2019. Is that accurate?
That is not accurate. We did not have a hearing in 2019. And
was there any kind of reconsideration in 2019?
That is before we presented that to the district court in our amended petition, and that was included in our motion for summary judgment. We included the challenge to the 2017 and the 2018 rate adjustment transfer, and no hearing has ever been given either.
No hearing, but was there any reconsideration conducted by the agency in 2019? That's what I thought I heard HHS counsel to say.
There was a hearing set and a hearing officer assigned, but there was no final decision by that hearing officer ever issued. All that was issued was this kind of post hoc justification in the letter that the CMS wanted to supplement the record with.
But you, so the district court, your viewpoint is that a reconsideration without a hearing isn't a reconsideration. That's basically what you're saying.
Yes, exactly.
So you're trying to say if there wasn't a hearing, you didn't have a reconsideration, even though the officer may have put out another ruling saying what it said before. What's your best case, simply put, that if there's a reconsideration requested, that entity must impanel a hearing in order for that to be the case?
Or some kind of hearing that we have the opportunity to respond to, rather than just issuing a letter saying, no, we're not going to change our mind.
Well, I mean, I hear that argument, but you're out of time. It's just not resonating with me just because you say it, that makes it be so. There are a lot of reconsiderations that courts do, and they don't invoke a whole nother hearing. They may go back and look at what's been filed, any new cases and so forth. So what makes the reconsideration defective merely because it wasn't here, unless there's something in the CFR or something else that expressly says there must be a hearing? And I haven't heard you identify something that's codified that mandated a hearing that wasn't done, to which the district court would be able to say, okay, no, first base was missed, person went straight to second base. That's what I'm listening for.
And it is, Your Honor, in 45 CFR 156.1220, subsection B, informal hearing. And there are informal hearing procedures described, and those are what the district court referenced in its opinion.
All right. All right. Well, I think we have your argument both on jurisdiction as well as the parameters of the other arguments. As I said, the briefing is the key to the kingdom. And so what you've briefed or not briefed is what, you know, you kind of stuck with. But the argument is helpful in illuminating perhaps what is before us and maybe what isn't before us. But we will untangle it as best that we can. And as I said at the outset, we appreciate both of your flexibility and nimbleness to give us the benefit of the argument. We will deem the case submitted and we'll sort it out and we'll get an opinion out as soon as we can.
Thank you. We appreciate the opportunity.
All right. Council may be excused.